It's a great privilege. It's a great pleasure to be here with you. Torah Shraga, it's really been an amazing trip. This is my second day of the trip. I just came in yesterday. I flew here from Newark, New Jersey. I don't know if any of you are familiar with New Jersey. Pretty much once you take off from Newark, life gets better from there. And I was on one of these flights with, you know, lots of from people, headed to Israel. I do a tremendous amount of travel. And, you know, I sit down and my goal is pretty much to just kind of keep to myself through the flight, be able to rest a little bit. I sit down and, of course, you know, in the seat right next to me, there's this woman who turns to me and she says, "Are you a rabbi?" And I'm thinking to myself, it's going to be the end of my flight. So I said to her, "No, I'm a skinhead. I just lost my shaver." So she says to me, "I have theological questions." So she starts asking me all her questions. And by the end of like the next 2 hours, basically, she had concluded that I cannot be saved. And I concluded that I could not raise money from her. So that was pretty much the end of our relationship. So then I fell into what can only be described as like a Tylenol PM-induced, you know, El Al coma, or United, whatever plane I was on. And, you know, I always like, I don't know, if you fly to Israel a lot, you see that there are certain types of Jews that are on all these flights. For example, the Hasidic guy who has like lots of plastic bags, you know? And like this guy, the whole flight, all he is doing is taking luggage out of the overhead compartment, opening it up, removing plastic bags. There are smaller plastic bags in that plastic bag. Finally, he pulls out of these plastic bags an apple. He takes one bite of the apple. And then he has to put it back in the plastic. So he puts it back in the plastic bag, but that bag's not going to go back in this big bag. For this, he will take out another suitcase from the overhead compartment next to the refrigerator that he brought on the plane to bring to his kids in Montesdorf. And he's removing this thing, more bags. The other thing that I always find on the flight is there's always one guy who, from the moment he gets on the plane, he sees it as his mission in life to wake everyone for Shabbos, right? And it's an amazing thing because literally I must have been out cold for a good 2 hours. I was like completely exhausted, totally asleep. I had come up a whole Shabbos in my shul. I was coming here. I was trying to get some rest. And in like a daze and a fog, like my eyes open and there's this guy like luring over me. And I'm thinking to myself, am I dead? Are you like Gabriel? Is this like... are you with Michael and the other guy and the whole song? And then the guy looks at me and he goes, with his big smile, with very crooked teeth, he goes, "Shachris?" And I said, "Oh, you're not Gabriel, you're Satan." And I'm in Gehenna. They wake you for Shachris. So it was a great flight, you know, and then you walk towards the back and there's always one guy who spends the entire flight standing in the back of the plane. And it's his job to take attendance of who goes in and out of the bathrooms and to try to screen the passengers for people who work in real estate. Not because he works in real estate, but because he likes to know everyone works in real estate. He's definitely on Hatzalah. And you basically end up talking to him for 2 or 3 hours. He knows your uncle, he knows this one, he knows that one. And he stands there the whole flight with an empty cup, right? The whole flight, mamish, from beginning to end. So the plane lands and we get to Eretz Yisrael, and now it's such a pleasure to spend a few days here, warmed up. I heard it was raining earlier, so I'm enjoying my time. I want to share with you a perspective and an insight for just a few minutes that I think could give us a tremendous sense of aspiration and dreams in terms of where we're headed, what we're trying to accomplish this year, and in terms of the decisions that we are facing for the trajectory of our lives forward. The Torah tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu came to the Jewish people, and Moshe Rabbeinu says to Am Yisrael, he says to them, "I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim. I'm going to emancipate you from this entire servitude. You are investing day and night, immersed in a world of slavery and oppression. And I'm going to rescue you from this entire experience." And Am Yisrael looks at Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Torah tells us, "Vayamein ha'am vayishmau ki pokad Hashem es b'nei Yisrael." The Jewish people look at Moshe and they say, "Finally, finally, a leader that's ready to disrupt this momentum this horrible slavery experience, finally a leader that's going to take us out of Egypt, worry. And then a few prakim later, at the beginning of this week's parsha, we encounter a very different dynamic. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the Jewish people and he says to Am Yisrael, I have a vision for you from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he begins to depict the four Rishonos of Geula, of redemption, that we're so familiar with. V'hotzeisi eschem, I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim. V'hitzalti, I'm going to save you from your demise at the hands of the Egyptians. V'lokachti v'hotzeisi v'hitzalti v'ga'alti, and I will redeem you. V'lokachti v'la'om, I'm going to take you for a nation. You're going to receive a Torah, a mandate to live a life of nobility. A mandate to live a life where you bring values and ideals to the Jewish people and to the rest of the world. The Hevesi, and I will bring you to a land and you will build a country, a society that is a beacon of the values and ideals of the Ribono Shalom, not only to Am Yisrael, but to the entire world. You will build a society, you will build a country, you will build a state that is defined by Torah values and gives people options when they flush the toilet if you want to go halfway or full. So the Klal Yisrael hears Moshe Rabbeinu and they listen to what he says. And the Torah says, what's their reaction? What is the reaction of Klal Yisrael to this depiction of this grandiose vision of what it means to build a nation, what it means to build a people? The Torah says the reaction is V'lo shamu el Moshe. They couldn't even hear what he was saying. They couldn't internalize what he was saying. They couldn't process his words. Mikotze ruach u'me'avoda kasha. Because of their short-winded exhaustion, their existential exhaustion from the experience of servitude, V'lo shamu el Moshe. And all of a sudden we encounter this dissonance between the leader and the people, between the vision and the implementation, between the dream and what will unfold as the redemptive reality below Shamuel Moshe. They couldn't even hear him. Sometimes leaders and constituents are not on the same page. I'm from Passaic, New Jersey. I live in Passaic, New Jersey, so I have a shul in the community. And one of the things that they asked me to do was sensitivity training with the local Passaic Police Department about the Jewish community. How did this come about? There is a woman on Friday night who exits her home on Brook Avenue, walks down the block and sees a police cruiser, knocks on the window and says, "Officer, officer, I need your help. Please come quick." These guys get out of the police car. They are so excited because nothing happens in Passaic. Usually they are involved in arresting the mayor. Other than that, there's very little that goes on. Although the mayor we have now is a very, very good guy. He's tremendous. I sold all the shul's chametz to him. That's another story. So they knock on the door and she's like, "I need your help. I live up the block. Come into my house." And they go and they follow her into the house. And their guns are drawn and they have night vision goggles and they run into the house and they're going room to room, clear, clear, room to room. And they're like, "Where is it? What's the problem? What's the problem?" And the woman's like, "So this light bulb in the refrigerator, I'm not saying you should unscrew it. I'm just saying I would be really happy if it was unscrewed. However that happens is fine with me. You could spin the refrigerator around the light bulb. You could spin whatever you want to do. I'm just saying it would make me happy." And these two cops are looking at this woman and they're thinking, "We got to unscrew something in you. You're the problem. You're the thing that's loose here." So they asked me if I would come speak to the police department about the Jewish community. So I show up at the precinct and I'm sitting in a room very similar to this, except all the people listening have guns. So I'm going to end on time. And I begin to talk to them. I explain to them why in the middle of March we're walking around dressed up as kings, queens, and pirates. And I explain to them, you know, about Yom Kippur and how we are atoning for everything. And we're walking around in white stuff and about shuls and about why the real estate in the neighborhood is so expensive. And I explain to them about tuition and schools and all things. And I explain to them all about Shabbos and why the men won't shake the women's hands, and I explain all these different things. I give them a whole 101 on Judaism. Cop raises his hand in the back of the room and he says, Rabbi, I have a question. He says, I understand everything you said about the day of rest. My question is, why is it that on the Sabbath, Jews are forbidden from using the sidewalk? Why is it that every other religion exits their house of worship and utilizes the designated pedestrian zone? And the Jewish people, they walk down the street with their strollers and carriages and the 9,000 children. And when the car comes down the street, they turn around like, where do you want me to go? Where do you want me to go? You want me to go on the side? Why are you even on this street? Do you have any Jews live on this street? So I did the only thing a rabbi can do when faced with a question from non-Jewish people that you cannot possibly answer. You blame it on anti-Semitism. I said to them, you have to understand how persecuted we are. Were the pogroms, we're very upset about the Crusades, the Holocaust, all throughout Jewish history, and a lot of this persecution happened on the sidewalk. So for us, this tremendous trauma, this is where we have to be. So we move on from that. And then another guy raises his hand and he says, Rabbi, I have a statement. It's not a question. He said, please, you know, mister, you have a gun. Feel free to say whatever you like. He says, I want you to know that I no longer pull over Orthodox Jews. I said, thank you very much. Why not? He says to me, it's not worth it. So you pull over an Orthodox Jew, there are five guys that pull over behind him. They're all out of their cars. They're all telling you he didn't do it. They were 3 miles away when this happened. They're all related to the mayor. Half of them are on city council. Something about Poland in 1936. And what do you think you are? And a Gestapo. And I can't. It's just not what, you know what? Just do what you want and pay the high taxes. We're perfectly happy to let you be on your own. So sometimes there's dissonance between leadership and constituents. And Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the people and he paints this vision, he paints this ambition, he says to them, we're going to build a nation. And Klal Yisrael looks at him, V'lo Shomuel Moshe, Mikotzer Ruach u'me'avod kosh. Ask them a question. What happened? What happened here? Only a couple prakim ago, the Jewish nation was on board. They were ready to follow Moshe out of Mitzrayim. And yet at the beginning of Parshas Va'era, all of a sudden, when Moshe's giving them a much greater vision, the Jewish people are like, we can't even forget you. We can't even think about this. V'lo Shamuel Moshe, Mikotzer Ruach u'me'avod kosha. So some Mefarshim say that in the interim, the actual edict of Avdus was intensified. That they were working harder and being further oppressed. So it was from the Kotzer Ruach and the Avodah Kasha. It was from the actual Avodah that their entire perspective changed. And they were no longer able to internalize this vision of redemption. But I want to share with you the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma makes a comment that views this entire scene, this entire confrontation between Moshe and the Jewish people completely differently. The Meshech Chachma, and I'm building on his approach, the Meshech Chachma says there's a fundamental difference between the first encounter and the second. See, in the first encounter, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the Jewish people and he talks to them about what we call freedom from. Freedom from oppression, freedom from brutality, freedom from slavery, freedom from other people constricting your identity, the ability to live without any demands, without any expectations, the ability to live life in total independence, liberty. And Klal Yisrael says, we're in. That's exactly what we're looking for. We're slaves, we hate it, and we've had enough. But then Moshe comes to them and says, the real vision is not freedom from, it's freedom to. It's freedom to build a nation. It's freedom to build a people. It's freedom to accept a Torah that's going to place expectations on your life. It's freedom to build a country, to build a nation. It is freedom that comes with demands and responsibilities and extraordinary opportunities. V'lo shamu el Moshe. But the Jewish people were so defined by their identity as slaves, by their deferential disposition towards life. The notion that their entire being, their entire essence can be captured and insisted that everything they did could be controlled by others. The notion that they could build something great. The notion that they could make a lasting impact on their nation and on the world was just beyond the conception of Am Yisrael at this particular time. V'lo shamu el Moshe. They couldn't hear him. Mikotzer ruach u'me'avoda kasha. Because of the total transformation that had taken place in who they were because of kotzer ruach and avoda kasha. And this encounter, this tension, this challenge is one that reverberates throughout Jewish history. The notion that we are so often defined by our constraints, that we draw lines and we place limits on our own perceptions of who we could be, that we allow the narrative of our lives to be written by circumstance and not by aspiration, that we allow others to determine whether they're social forces, societal forces, familial forces, whether they're just personal temptations. We allow other forces of avdus, things that control us. We allow other external forces to define who we are and where we could go. And Moshe Rabbeinu's vision of redemption, of Geula, is not just about taking the Jews out of Mitzrayim. It's about taking Mitzrayim out of the Jews. That they could begin to expel from the essence of who they are this limiting notion of their capacity. And so often in life, we draw these lines and we say to ourselves, this is where I could reach, this is where I could go. And the pathway that will take me there, whatever the least form of resistance I can end, that's exactly where I want to be. V'lo shamu el Moshe, we can't look around and see the limitless opportunities for growth and impact and the ability to make a difference in the world that exists all around us. We lack vision. When Moshe Rabbeinu encounters HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the snare, so Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, he resists this entire mission. Says to God, I don't know if you've met these people. They're not so easy. They complain a lot. They're Jews. You really want to get started with this. And there's resistance. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, he says something amazing. He says to Moshe, Ra'o ra'isi es ani ami asher b'mitzrayim v'es tzak hasom. Ra'o ra'isi, I surely see, explains my salvation. That the Medrash says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, Ata roe re'iya achas. You only see one vision. You only see the people as they are. Ani roe shtei re'ios. I see the people for where they are, and I see the people for where they could be. I understand the aspirations and the dreams and where things could head and where they could ultimately find themselves. And the ability to create that vision, the ability to understand that Geula is a process that unfolds. Hotseisi, Hitzalti, Ga'alti, Lakachti, that transition, that transformation from the world of Shibud to the world of Geula, that it's all part of the story of the Jewish people. You know, when someone wants to convert, when someone wants to join the Jewish people, so they come to us and they say, I want to convert. I want to become part of Am Yisrael. I want to go into real estate. So So what happens? What do we say to those people? We say, here's an application, fill it out, you know, dunk dunk, you're in. Is that what we say? No. What do we say to them? What do we say to them?
No. Don't do it.
You don't want to be part of the Jewish people. Dechufim, mezufim. You have no idea. Do you know how much we're oppressed? And you know how much we're persecuted? And you open a newspaper to any page, you'll see the UN. This one could do this, and this one could do that. Israel, like, forgets to tip a waitress, and there's a, you know, an entire resolution condemning them as horrible settlers. And you don't want to have anything. You cannot imagine how complicated this is. You're not interested. Asks the Rav, that's what you do when someone comes and says they want to be a Jew? You tell them how terrible everything is? And the answer is, you do. And you know why you do? Because the story of Am Yisrael is not just the story of Geula. It's the story of transformation. It's the story of Shibud to Geula. It's the story of tragedy and triumph. It's the story of challenge and achievement. It's the story of hope, and it's the story of destiny. And it is when people can hear, can see a greater vision than the one that they are within now, that is when you encounter the magic of what it means to live as a redeemed people. And that's what we do every Pesach at the Seder. I don't know what your Pesachs are like. I grew up in these Pesach hotels. My parents had one of those Pesach hotel companies. So the world could be divided into two groups. Those who go away to hotels for Pesach, and those who hate those who go away to hotels for Pesach. Right? Talking about one of these hotels where, like, you get there and literally there is a petting zoo on the buffet. Like, every animal you have ever seen talk in a cartoon is slaughtered with barbecue sauce on the buffet, non-gebrochs. And mom, you could play duck, duck, goose with live animals. Like, your momish. So I grew up on this thing, and I got to see lots of different people have seders. And you know, what always struck me is, you know, every group always has that one guy who gets very into the Seder, into like the shtick of the Seder. You know, like, this is the guy that brings like real blood, you know, like to the Seder, puts it on the table. Like, actual frogs are jumping around. He like opens a vial of smallpox to like release a disease. Like, everyone can experience a plague in like a very, you know, in serious way. And I was like, so what is the Seder? The Seder is Maschil B'Gnusu Messiah B'Shvat. The Seder is the journey. You're not Yotzei. The Seder on Pesach, if all you do is live redemption. You're Yotzei the Seder on Pesach. If you live servitude, you live Marar, you live the challenge, you live the Avdus, and then you're able to hear the call. You're able to hear the call of Otsesi, Hitzalti, Goalti, Lokachti, and raise that cup and make a bracha of Goal Yisrael. Machil Bignus, Umesayim Bishvach. That's the journey of the Jewish people. The journey of the Jewish people is the journey to hear the calling of Moshe, is the journey to hear the calling of redemption, is the journey to hear the calling of greatness. And very often, we don't recognize how much capacity we have within ourselves. We're all spending an incredible year. An incredible year where one of the most defining and amazing features of this experience that really can almost not be replicated anywhere else is the diminishing of the noise that is around our lives. And when the noise level and the distraction level and the temptation levels all get, not eliminated, but all get diminished a little bit, there are voices that we can hear that are always there, but now they are discernible. Now they are audible. And those are the voices that are in us that recognize that we could accomplish something great, that we can make an impact on the world. My job at YU is I work with communities throughout North America. Work with their rabbanim, work with their leaders, work with their balabatim, bring the Torah of YU to communities through the internet, through print publications, through kollelim, through students. And I will tell you that the Jewish community is full of people who have decided to live their lives as kotzer ruach and avodah kasha. It's too stressful. It's too challenging. I have nothing to give. I have nothing to contribute. I have nothing to lead. I'm the guy who sits, like in my shul, the guys who talk in the back of the shul, and the guys who talk in the front of the shul. And that's my life. I'm like, I just do my thing, and I go to me, I just do my thing. The Lo Shamu El Moshe, they can't even hear the calling that they have capacity to make a difference. And then there are people who step up, and there are people who make an impact, and there are people who make a difference in the community and make a difference in the world. They lead. And those are people who have had defining experiences like you. Those are people who grew up with a sense of passion and a sense of dedication, and who evolved within yeshivos and within the opportunities to be able to nurture that ability to make a difference. I have a great zechus, and you have a great zechus. You're in touch with YU all the time. And at YU, one of the most overwhelmingly transformative dimensions of the experience is it turns you into somebody who walks into the world with the confidence and the substance and the ability to make a difference. Let me tell you something. It's not the easiest approach. It's not the easiest approach. There are easier options. But it's the option that will prepare us to be able to make the most substantive and transformative contribution to the Jewish world. And the Jewish world needs you more than ever. The greatest existential threat to the Jewish people is not the United States pulling out of Syria. It is assimilation. It is the hundreds of thousands and millions of Jews that have been lost and disconnected. And it is only through an animated, passionate, articulate people who understand the culture and understand the world and have nuance and can truly bring people closer to something amazing that Klal Yisrael is going to make it to the next generation. And that is on you. That's on you. So you could decide, this rabbi's up here, he's telling me about changing the world and making it an impact and making a difference in my future and communities. You could decide that that's too hard. V'lo shamu el Moshe, mikotzer ruach u'me'avo dekosh. Or you could decide to be machil b'gnos u'mesayim l'shvach. You could decide to embrace that opportunity to make a difference. If it's at YU, if it's anywhere else, no matter where you go, no matter what you choose, to land in a community, hopefully in Eretz Yisrael, where there's certainly a tremendous amount of work to be done, but even if you end up living in the diaspora or in America, to devote yourself and dedicate yourself to see yourself as someone that can make an impact, as someone that can make a difference. Not to sell yourself short. To be able to embrace the aspirations and the dreams of the Jewish people. Have a wonderful, amazing day.